This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Welcome to We Empower, the radio show that inspires you to embrace your potential, resilience, and strength. In these challenging times, we're here to help you unlock your power to overcome obstacles, pursue your dreams, and shape a brighter future. I'm Anna Martinez, your host for this empowering hour. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of We Empower. I'm thrilled to have you all with us today. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired. Let's make today count. In today's episode, we will have a great guest here to introduce. It's Frank Thelen. Frank is a well-known TV personality in Germany. And besides this, he's a European serial founder, technology investor, bestseller author, and many more. His mission is to bring innovation into Europe or to drive this further. Let's talk about this. And later on, I'm happy to introduce a great book to you. It calls How Things Are Made. And I don't not only love it because of the pocket in the front, but there's a lot in I will introduce to you later on. So we will start with a song selected by Frank, and let's listen to it. Welcome here in the show, Frank. I'm very happy to have you here.
Great to be here. Thank you so much.
We heard a song, and I think this song has a special meaning for you. Do you want to explain quickly?
Absolutely. So this is a house remix of Michael Saylor. He's the founder and CEO of MicroStrategy, basically collecting as many Bitcoins as he can. And he is kind of the super bullish, laser-eyed guy who says, there's only Bitcoin, anything else is worth nothing. And I just like it a lot that then the community is getting creative with that and then making remixes and house music of this. And yeah, I like Bitcoin a lot. I like Ethereum even better, but I believe it's a timely, very interesting song.
Where does it come from that this Bitcoin is still a magic for many people and also for the politicians that some said it's something you shouldn't invest and you should hide away from?
I mean, it's very, very hard to understand. And when you look at the kind of the established world, like Warren Buffett, he said that's rat poison. And and then on the other hand, you have the new modern guys like Michael Saylor, who says Bitcoin is the only store of value that we have. And I mean, the truth is for me somewhere in the middle, because there is a network that is very, very stable over decades. There is high liquidity. It has shown that it works. It's clearly limited in the amount of coins in the code. So yeah, it could work, and currently it looks like it will work as a kind of store of value. So I believe you can have a little bit of it, but I believe not too much, because there is There's still volatility and also risk, but I believe to have a little portion of it in your assets, that could make sense.
Yeah, absolutely. We have now a turnaround in the politics since Trump said that Bitcoin is something he would like to invest officially. Is this something which will make Bitcoin value where you're in a currency where you think that goes more and more, more public or more into the wide society?
Well, for sure. If big countries are adopting the Bitcoin standard, this would mean kind of a, that's for sure, that would push the price a lot and also would make it more stable. We have El Salvador is already using the Bitcoin currency. We have some public traded companies that have some of their assets in Bitcoin. They've just been in the Microsoft board a discussion one day ago, but they so far still declined to put some of their assets into Bitcoin. So the adoption of countries, just yesterday, Texas, a state in the US, as far as I'm read, are really thinking about putting Bitcoin on their balance sheet. So yeah, the more adoption we will see from big corporations and countries, Bitcoin will become more valuable and stable. That's what would happen. But it could also go the other way around, that, for example, I don't see it right now because Donald Trump is quite bullish, but he could also say sometimes, oh, it's very bad, it's rat poison, and then it could go the other way. But currently, as far as I can see, the stars are aligned and crypto could have a couple of good years, but nobody knows.
Yeah, right. And nobody knows. A lot of people talk about playing money. And if some of our listeners have no idea about Bitcoin, how would you describe it?
Well, Bitcoin is a store of value. We have the kind of the same with gold. So gold has no value in itself, but we as people, we believe that gold has a value. So we trade it against assets like an egg or a bread, or euros and dollar from the government, the central banks, and that's basically where Bitcoin offers an alternative. So it's a worldwide blockchain with many participants in there. It's very secure from the protocol and the algorithms behind it, and has proven that it cannot be hacked or cracked so far. And it's limited to 21 million coins. So that's what this offers, and just has grown in the amount of people that believe in it, that use it. And so it's a store of value. If you worked hard for an hour as a wherever, whatever your profession is, and then you want to store the work you just did, you can get dollars, euros, or you can pounds, or you can put it into Bitcoin. And so far, nobody knows how this will go on. Bitcoin was the best store of value we have ever seen, but this is no guarantee for the future.
Great description, thank you. And yes, I think it is hard for people to understand it from outside because it sounds a little bit like butter business, right? And on the other hand, it sounds much. I mean, it is. If we look at it from a higher amount and look at it from other areas or other ways of making money, then it's very stable. And what you said, it is possible to check it, and that makes it really good against criminality, good against also, or good for saving your values, right? So normally, it should be something, or it must be something which is good for democracies.
Well, yeah, yes and no, because there's different views on it. So one thing is that they say the government really owns the currency. So the central bank controls also the amount of the currency in the market. They steer the interest rates, and therefore they have the power, and hopefully doing it wisely to kind of do with how many jobs do we have, how much money is in the system. So there are people that say that's the best way to go, because governments are smart and they need these tools to make sure that we all have a job and everything goes fine. We're not growing too fast and not too slow. So that's one view. The other view is to say, they're printing money like hell. The debt crisis is unsustainable. And Bitcoin is a solution because there is nobody behind it who can just print more Bitcoins. So in the code, and you can't change the code, at least not easily. So far, it has been yeah. So the basic concept is you can't change the code of the blockchain of Bitcoin, and therefore it's limited in the amount of Bitcoins available, and no humans should be able to print more or less or steal the market. So these are two different philosophies, and there are pros and cons for both.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, you have a deep insight, not just into Bitcoin and blockchain. You have a deep insight also in many and new technology. You are an investor. And what is the difference for you, the biggest difference between being an entrepreneur and an investor? I mean, you look at that from different angles. You are a deep TV personality with Höhle der Löwen, where you're not only an investor, but also having your show. So, what would you say from these two views?
Well, yeah, so being part of Shark Tank and Dragon's Den is then the kind of the third thing where you invest on steroids, and there's also some show element into this. So starting first with the entrepreneur. The entrepreneur is somebody who builds something that is not existing today. And that's for me kind of the best thing I have done in my life. But it's really, really hard. So from the outside, it looks often very cool. And then you see on TechCrunch or whatever, hey, they raised 100 million, they sold the company, he's now a superstar. But what happens in reality is that you really eat glass. So going through building a company, building a team, working on high pressure, on high speed, with a lot of competition, because otherwise it's not an attractive market if there's no competition. It's truly super, super intense, yeah, and that's why building a company is great, but most of them fail, and you have to be ready just to do it. Even so, it's kind of a suicide mission, but it's a great mission. Then
That's
investing, I have two ways to invest. First is the private market, so we call it venture capital. That's what I also do in Dragon's Den or Shark Tank, and there. You see a company, you only see it, or some private investors. It's not public. You invest, and then we build the company with the team. So we write code, we do the design, we help with sales, we set up the HR department. So we here at Freigeist Capital have the concept that we help the company then build, but we're only helping. They're the founders in the with on the steering helm. And then we invest in a public market, and that's a little bit like a chess game, because the public market is where everybody can invest, basically. All the information must be public or should be public. Anything else would be insider trading, which is, for very good reasons, forbidden. And there you have to have the data game, so how you utilize the data that's available, how you move basically the chessboard, and that's a very well, it's a great challenge to beat the market, and it's of course not easy. Yeah, and these are the different ways and how do I invest and work.
And if you describe your first exit, how was this? You called it this entrepreneurship a kind of suicide, and I completely agree with you. There's so much awaiting behind each bush, and you never know or where is the angle, what drives you crazy about a team member or the finance investor is paying late, whatever it is. How was it? So the feeling of the first exit, can you describe this moment or the situation where I mean, you have a baby, you're working very hard on this, and then there comes a point where you say, okay, boom.
Well, absolutely. So it was a company that where we created a software platform for online photo services. So you took a photo digital, and then you had a normal print or a book or a calendar or a mug. So that's a big industry today. And we became the worldwide leading provider of the software. And then we stumbled upon a Fujifilm in Japan. And they said, okay, we want to take over, or you want to buy the company. And then we had a lot of discussions. Many Japanese people came over. We're located in Germany.
Does it
And
have to do with the Japanese culture?
yeah, the Japanese culture, yeah, exactly, is very, very, well, for me, it's strange. Not for them, of course, but for me, it's strange because, for example, people are sleeping during a meeting. So when I'm building companies, or let's say Elon Musk, who is the greatest entrepreneur for me, he's always very Very few people in the meeting, very short, very sharp. If you see that you don't, cannot add value, leave the meeting and so on. And it's very different for Japanese people because they bring a lot of people, some sleep, they discuss before
What the
what they
result
want to
will be,
achieve, and
right?
they're not confronting each other inside a meeting or discussing. So it's very for kind of the Western Silicon Valley like that's where I was trained in the startup scene. It's very strange. So yeah, so they came over a lot of people. Then we discussed it, and then they said, okay, yeah, we want to buy the company. And then for 2 or 3 weeks, I heard nothing. Then I called this guy and say, Masa-san, what's going on? Yeah, and it was strange. But in the end, we were sitting at the big legal office from Clifford Chance, and then we were negotiating the sales contract, the SPA. And then was one Japanese guy, I don't know why, with a calculator, solar powered, with a cat sticker on it. I will never forget this. And he was typing it, did it, and I was like, oh, oh. Now, yeah, in the end, we signed the deal, and I was sitting with my business partner Mark Zeberger in the car, and I said, "Okay, shit, now we've really sold the company. What's next?" And then we put 1 million aside on a bank account and said, "We split this in 10 100K euro checks, and we just." Give them to other startups because they're struggling. And basically, this is a good cause because it's so hard to build a company and a startup and to build a success. It's very, very unlikely that we will ever get any money back. So we invested into 10 companies, and that then became a very big success and one of the most successful seed VCs in Europe. Yeah, but then the first starting, because we'd only built one company, was like, shit, nobody is surviving this. The money will be gone.
Can you share with us a few of these seed investments which really did good?
Yeah, Wunderlist, for example, we have been now it's part of Microsoft Office, and it was the fastest growing task manager. So when you have a to-do app, which is kind of an industry today, there's Todoist and other Superlist and other great products. So we basically established that industry together with the founder Christian Reber. We had the European Uber. It's called Free Now. I don't know if it's available in the UK, but it's in Germany, Austria, Switzerland, and so on. It's the leading service. It's called Free Now. We sold that to Daimler, and yeah, and many other startups that really became very big, and then we sold them, and then we got more money back, and then we started to investing more seriously in bigger ideas like Lilium Aviation, that unfortunately is currently struggling, but where we build electric airplanes, we invest in cancer treatments, energy storages, and so on. So we started then to invest more progressively in future technology.
Yeah, and future for Germany and abroad. So, what you've done and what you how you founded it, it's really organic and it's a great success story. And I'm looking forward to talking further to you. Also about where does this name Freigeist comes from? Because this might sound a bit weird for our native listeners. So stay tuned, and we are back in a couple of minutes.
The station that makes you feel good.
Did I put the clothes in the dryer? I hope they don't think I was serious.
I need to be
about
awake. Snacks. I
forgot
my brain shut
just
off.
Sleep already.
When your racing thoughts keep you up at night, it's tough to let go and get the rest you need. Better sleep can help. You might have heard of white or brown noise, but there's a whole rainbow of color noises, and they can help you calm your mind, reduce stress, and sleep better, like the green noise you're listening to now. With the Better Sleep app, you can discover more color noises and over 200 soothing sounds, guided meditations, and bedtime stories. High-quality rest is vital to your mental well-being and physical health. Calm your restless mind, conquer your day, and sleep better at night. Download Better Sleep from the App Store or Google Play and start a 7-day trial today. Because when you sleep better, you feel better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We continue with Frank Tian, serial entrepreneur, investor, TV show personality, and bestseller author of some books. So, Frank, thank you for having you here. We already talked a little bit about your role as entrepreneur and investor, and we stuck there where I said I would love to know where this name Freigeist comes from, which is the name of your venture company.
Yes, so we are based in Germany, and we're also mainly invest here in the region. We also have some investments in the other parts of Europe, but we're focused basically here in the DACH region. And Freigeist means no limitations in your thoughts. We want to build the next frontier technology, or want to help great entrepreneurs to build it. And I believe it's fair to say that we support crazy missions, so that are kind of doomed to fail, because otherwise it's not real venture capital. And we're really supporting some crazy missions. Some work out, some fail, and that's why we believe the Freigeist is a good name for the company.
I really love the name because it reminds me of my childhood, where I had to stick in a school with nuns and only girls, and I hated it and took every day where I could miss school and tell my parents any lies about why I can't go to school. Freigeist would have been exactly the word which have been triggered me. Do you think that we in Germany need more of that, to be more a nation of investors, a nation of risk takers, and country of entrepreneurs?
Well, absolutely. So we lost our Pioniergeist quite some time ago. And when you look at why is Germany until today reasonably well off, because it's of the Siemens, it's of the Sennheisers, it's of the Porsche, it's of those people that really built something with a lot of risk and a lot of passion. And what I see today is that this is gone. So we lost it. And whenever when somebody wants to build something big, many people say, oh, this will not work, we have to regulate this and all these other things. And so, yeah, Germany, unfortunately, is in not in a great spot right now. And we need to revive our creative thinking, our building, our passion, our risk appetite. It's really a bad situation currently.
I agree with you. Freigeist can't be a better word for the situation which is needed. What do you think? What should be done? I mean, for example, IHK, the Trade Chamber of Commerce, they have a group of people where I'm also part of. They sent us into schools to tell about entrepreneurship experiences. But if I ask them, the school people, who of you is interested to found, then sometimes one person is raising the hand saying, oh, my father is a dentist, maybe I'm a risk taker. and take us, and then I have to laugh inside myself if it wouldn't be so sad. What must happen? What are the steps needed, which are really also possible to do?
So yeah, I also sometimes visiting classes in school, and so I have one idea. What I give to them is to give them a credit card that basically has 10,000 euros every month on it, and say, now what are you doing with your life? Because they're thinking in such boxes and say, it's all about security. So many people want to work at the government. Yes. Some people just want to do what their parents currently do because they can make a living out of that. And there are very, very few who says, okay, I want to go crazy. And I will build something new. And what can you do? So that's why I'm also spending my time like on shows like this show. I'm writing books. I am sometimes on a primetime TV show where we show entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you have to educate the people. And in the end, we need heroes like Steffi Graf and Boris Becker. They kind of filled the tennis schools. And we need entrepreneurs like an Elon Musk that have built rockets, that have built planes and whatever. And then you say, okay, I want to be like him or like her, and then I want to do it too. So we need heroes, and that's quite important. But the problem is, to build a hero, you need a lot of money. Because even if they are successful, like Daniel, who's the founder of Lilium Aviation, is wicked smart, worked super hard, and achieved a lot. But you need billions and billions of dollars to build a plane, a rocket, a cancer treatment, or whatever. So we are currently missing the later stage growth funding in Europe. That is a problem. So yeah, let's see and hope that we can build finally a rocket again in Europe with ESA Aerospace or other startups, or that Lilium Aviation survives. But yeah, it's tough currently to build those heroes here.
And do you think we have too little money here in the country or in Europe, or is it just this less risk taken because
the mindset? The mindset. So for now, we have still money. We have money of the big families like Aldi's, Miele's, Sennheiser's, Fissmann's, whatever. So we have, and I personally know many billionaires.
Yeah.
And they have also the liquidity. It's not that it's bound. Like, my money is mostly bound in startups and other things. So, yeah, of course, I can survive. But it's always like I'm pushing all the money back into all those crazy missions. But they have the liquidity. Or Susanne Klatten.
Good stuff.
But they're not willing. They're not willing to take the risk. They don't have the DNA to say, okay, here's 100 million for Lilium Aviation. Here's 100 million for ESA Aerospace. Here's 100 million for the quantum computing and whatever. So we're missing those, the people with the deep pockets. I am slowly on my way to hopefully get some money so that I can write bigger and bigger checks. I'm on my way, but it takes just time because I don't have a rich family, but I have to really earn the money. But we need a mind shift here desperately, so that because now we still have the money. I don't know how long we have it.
Yes, you're right. I completely agree with you. And if I see, for example, Melinda Gates saying $60 million dollars for female startups or female invested funds, and here we see no movement or close to no movement. We have people like Gisa Pelzer with OXO, but it's little. We have some signs, but it's really a drop. And I completely agree with you. Do we need another politics? Maybe. I mean, we have politicians which have no idea about entrepreneurship, which have no idea about risk taking.
And unfortunately, also getting involved in the current election in Germany, because I believe it's really important. I just have just today two meetings with some of the candidates. I'm supporting them financially, but also in my reach, because we need a different people in the government, because currently there is no understanding of how to. It's not only startups, but we also need a strong country. So we need to deregulate. The Doge initiative in the US is quite great. I like Milei a lot, what he's doing. But our politicians are laughing about this and say, oh, can you do what Milei is doing? And I said, well, maybe not everything is great, but at least he's really succeeding. Look at the results of his reforms, and yes. I want to have kind of the same movement here in Germany, where we get slim and strong and agile again, and that's very important. But honestly, I don't know if we will succeed.
No, I don't neither. I'm from Rhineland, so I'm always very positive. But here it stops a little bit, unfortunately. But you are a best-selling author, and that you're a best-selling author means that you can tell stories and can bring people to a level that they are trusting in you and your messages and that what you're saying. So why did you wrote a book, and how was it to writing the first book?
Oh, so why? Because I always like new challenges, and it's sometimes you have to I have to do a challenge like Mark Zuckerberg is really doing this, of course, on a different level. So every year he's taking a new challenge, and I was saying, okay, wow, why not a book? And I wanted to tell the story in the first book about my life
Yeah, right.
because there's a lot of positive thinking and fans around my kind of brand and my life, but there are also a lot of haters who say he's a bad guy, he has no clue. And I wanted to tell the true story about how did I build it, how where did I go wrong, where did I fail, how much did I suffer, what were the big successes, and really wanted to tell the honest story about it. And that was my first book, and it ended with explaining what will happen or hoping to explain what will happen in the future. And then just a couple, I don't know, 2 years later, I wrote a book only about that. So what, how will disruptive technologies shape our future? And that's then my second book, called 10x DNA. And my third book, which I'm writing currently, will be about a different topic.
Ah, okay. I'm looking forward to present it to the listeners here as soon as you're ready with that. But how can you make time for writing this? Because I know by myself it's tough. I made myself the goal 10 years ago to writing 50 books in 10 years, and it was a tough goal. I managed it, but I know how tough it is if you have many things to manage over the day.
Well, absolutely. You have to get in the flow and then write and for over Christmas and so on. And I still remember like going skiing with my wife, and then I just had to say sorry, 2 days less skiing, and I have to write. Yeah, you have to find the time and do it. But
Exactly.
here's the thing. Once you learned it, and I can only push everybody to write a book because it is a craftsmanship to write and to bring your thoughts into structure and then sentence and then words. And what and after writing the first and the second book, I believe my emails, my whole communication style is so much better, so much more effective because I can write faster. So it's like training, it's like playing tennis or whatever. So writing a book will make you a better writer, and we have to write a lot. So it's painful. It's a painful process, but it's really worthwhile.
It's absolutely right. I mean, I can can't agree more. And it's interesting because some of the quite well-known psychotherapist, Clemens Kubi, he also says this is a kind of you are the producer of a kind of theater, of a kind of new rewriting of a part of you. So you are the regisseur, and you can grow a lot by just reading because you reflect a little bit. You grow by reading it again. So it's a process which has also a kind of regenerative and psychological effects, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So yeah, I believe it's great. So yeah, maybe the message here to to your audience, maybe start writing a book.
Yes. And of course, I will, if you give me some links or I have the links, I can also use them and drop something down on Instagram, giving the people some ideas about the books. And we will present them, especially, of course, if you have them in English. Some people would think that you have no time at all for yourself over the day because you might be so busy with everything. You have your head focused on technology, but I know that the frontier is much more differentiated. So what are your hacks for over the day to stay centered, to stay in your with a strong immune system? What are you doing over the day to keep around that?
So first of all, it's about passion. So if you really love what you're doing, it doesn't feel like work, but it's just like your life. And a good friend of mine, Judith Williams, it's unbelievable the energy that she has to sell and build her product and so on. So she was always about the product, and she just loves what she's doing. That's kind of the same for me for technology. So I'm really curious about what will happen now with the next generation of quantum computing? What will happen with the next generation of large language models? So I'm just like I'm just happy that I can work. But then what I do is I have a clear digital ecosystem. So with the task manager, the documents that we manage, of course, today, AI tools that help me a lot. And then there's a team. There are people that support me in many, many different ways. People that are often in many areas smarter than me because I don't know that much about physics and other areas. So I have very bright people, very engaged people that help me in having a very effective day to get everything done.
Yeah, that's great. And what you're saying is super important. So therefore, you need to know your limits. You need to know your strength. Where do you got it from? I mean, of course, you tried things, you mastered things. But is there a recipe you could give listeners how they can figure out their strengths and their weaknesses?
Well, first of all, you really need the drive to build something. And I believe that's the thing. So when I look at many people, I say, okay, I tried everything, but it didn't work. But I said, okay, but last night you watched Netflix. And that's not going through your limits. So your brain and your body can do so much more. And that's the first thing. So if you wanna know your strength, go into the extremes and say, work really, really, really hard and listen to Elon. Elon is the best entrepreneur maybe we ever have seen, definitely currently alive, but I believe definitely, or maybe even the whole, whatever, the best entrepreneur. And he works so hard and so focused. And that has to be your ambition to say, okay, that's my strength, so I will go. And if the weakness, you have to reflect on yourself and see where you're really effective, what you can work on effectively and what not, and then try to find the right people that work with you. But first of all, you have to get a little bit of success because you need the money to hire the people. So it's not like when that's because if you just start, okay, I want to have a great writer, I want to have a great designer and whatever, and then I do a great show. But first, you have to use everything that you have and then just build the first show that's not perfect, but earn the first money and then hire a video producer. So it's step by step.
Yeah, great. And also, I think it's important to learn from you. It's step by step. It's not something which is made in a snap. It's something which is built by discipline, something built by trust, also after your failures. If you look back, what is the most important you learned out of the whole, your experience as an entrepreneur, your experiences as an investor, your experiences as a TV show personality, and your experience as a bestseller author? Maybe one tip you would like to give to our listeners.
Get a little bit better every single day. It's minor steps, but get better. So whenever something happens to me, because I did miss a meeting, I was in the wrong meeting, or I did send the email in the wrong way, I always reflect and say, how can I make sure that this will never happen to me again? And we all have problems and challenges in life. So just get a little bit better every single day, and it will compound in a way you can't imagine.
That's great. Thank you so much, Frank. It was such a pleasure to have you here. I wish we could extend the radio show now to another hour, but maybe we can do it again or do a second series. And I'm already happy to review your book here in this radio show. So looking forward to have yourself time for finishing it over your skiing on time now over Christmas, and very much looking forward to be one of your first readers. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure, and maybe talk soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And so we go into a small break, and afterwards we will have a great book, which is How Things Are Made from Automobiles to Zippers. So stay tuned. I'm looking forward to having you here in a couple of minutes again.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Did I put the clothes in the dryer? I hope they don't think I was serious.
I need to be awake.
Snacks. I forgot my brain shut off.
Just sleep already.
When your racing thoughts keep you up at night, it's tough to let go and get the rest you need. Better sleep can help. You might have heard of white or brown noise, but there's a whole rainbow of color noises, and they can help you calm your mind, reduce stress, and sleep better, like the green noise you're listening to now. With the Better Sleep app, you can discover more color noises and over 200 soothing sounds, guided meditations, and bedtime stories. High-quality rest is vital to your mental well-being and physical health. Calm your restless mind, conquer your day, and sleep better at night. Download Better Sleep from the App Store or Google Play and start a 7-day trial today. Because when you sleep better, you feel better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Frank Taylor gave us today some ideas on how to stay curious, and he said that's always the small little steps. I would like to give you today a few more small little steps which can make a difference in your life. Have you ever asked yourself how things are made? Have you asked yourself without just using things where things come from? I think this could be the first part of your life to get into the unknown, into the new, into something where you stay curious, where you stay just questioning things, where you stay just asking about the things around you to maybe find something better, to maybe understand it, to maybe get new ideas, or even just maybe get to the point that you change the attitude you're staying in the work, the change of attitude you're moving in it. So I would like to start with a review of the book first. It is from Automobiles to Zippers from Sharon Rose and Neil Schleiger. The book offers a fascinating deep dive into the processes behind everyday objects, from this intricate layers of an iPhone screen, which might be interesting for some of you, but for some not, to the material used in bulletproof vests. Aimed at curious minds, it reveals the ingenuity and innovation behind the creation of explanations, supported by detailed illustrations and engaging anecdotes. Whether you're a technology enthusiast or someone who enjoys trivia, this book provides insight into both modern and historical manufacturing processes. Its approachable language and visual aids make it suitable for readers of all ages. Sharon Rose is a business consultant and a hands-on maker in her free time. It's known for her curiosity about how things work. She resides in Redmond, Washington, and has a passion for dismantling and rebuilding objects. Neil Schleiger, a prolific editor and writer, is noted for creating accessible educational resources across a range of technical and scientific topics. Together, their expertise combines practicality with a love for storytelling. This book was first published in 1995 and has been thoroughly revised and expanded several times, to including new technologies like modern smartphones. Its inspiration stems from the author's desire to demystify complex manufacturing processes for general readers. They aim to bridge the gap between the hidden world of industrial production and everyday consumers, showing how curiosity can lead to understanding the extraordinary effort behind commonplace items. And what is the essence of the book? Seven tips I would like to give you. First, stay curious. Always ask how things work, as curiosity drives innovation. Learn history. Understanding historical advancements can deepen your appreciation of modern tools. Appreciate detail. Even simple objects like zippers require intricate design and engineering. Reduce waste. Knowing production processes encourages mindful consumption. And maybe repair. Look behind brands. Focus on quality and craftsmanship in everyday purchases. Celebrate ingenuity. Everyday items, like helicopters, were inspired by natural designs such as maple seeds. And explore technologies. The book highlights the evolving role of automation in manufacturing and gives you a better understanding of how it came and why it stays. So I would like to finish the review of the book with five quotes from the authors. First, did you know the first barcode appeared on a pack of gum? It changed retail forever. Second, manufacturing processes blunt precision, patience, and creativity, qualities we all can learn from. Third, every object around you tells a story of human ingenuity. And fourth, sometimes it's the smallest items, like sewing needles, that require the greatest leaps in innovation. Fifth, curiosity is the root of every invention. It all starts with asking, how? This book not only informs but inspires a renewed sense of wonder about the technologies that underpin your daily lives. You can learn more or purchase the book via publishers. And I think it's great to give you an insights by reading. So I can't ask you now what you want to hear more about it. So I thought I'd take this here, the jeans, the blue jeans, at first and tell you a little bit about a few other things which I found super interesting in our daily life. So let's hear something about the blue jeans. The inventor is Levi Strauss, 1873. And our US blue jeans sells 12.34 billion. In a world where fashion is notoriously fickle, blue jeans have been a wardrobe basic for more than a century. As fast as clothes styles change, rock denim remains popular and in demand from year to year, season to season, even generation to generation with only minor evolutions. Cloth may fade, but the fat never seems to fade away. Blue jeans are casual pants made from strong yet comfortable denim cloth. They have been long been a favorite sturdy work pant for farmers, sailors, miners, and cowboys. For the last 50 years, students and young people have adopted jeans as an unofficial uniform, and smart designers have labeled them as trend-setting status symbols. Denim has a long history. The name comes from Serge de Nîmes, or Serge Estron, twill cloth made in Nîmes, France. Originally, it was made from wool. During the 1700s, however, weavers added cotton to the cloth. Later, it is made from cotton alone. At first, the tough stuff was used to make sails. Eventually, some savvy Genoese sailors decided the strong material would make great pants or jeans. The origin of jeans. Jeans were blue because denim was treated with a blue dye from the indigo plant. Indigo had been used as a dye since 2500 BC in Asia, Egypt, Greece, Rome, Britain, and Peru. Blue jean manufacturers imported indigo from India until the 20th century, when synthetic indigo was developed. Blue jeans, as they are known today, were invented in 1853 by Levi Strauss, a German immigrant. Strauss was a San Francisco merchant with extra balls of blue denim in his storeroom. He noticed that miners who flocked to California looking for gold needed the work pants. He designed and marketed denim pants as Levi's, and within 10 years, miners, farmers, and cowboys wear them daily. Original Levi's didn't have rivets in their seams. A Russian immigrant tailor named Jacob Davis invented riveted pants for a miner who complained that simply stitched denim wasn't rough enough to hold his tools. Strauss bought the idea from Davis in 1873 for $69, the price of a US patent application. Few other changes were made over the next century. Zippers replaced buttonflies in 1920. In 1937, rivets on the back of jeans were moved inside the pockets because of complaints from school boards that students' jean rivets stretched up their desk. Cowboy had the same concern about their saddles being damaged. Parents worried over family furniture, and cow fenders were taking a beating. In the 1960s, rivets disappeared entirely from back pockets. During the 1950s, blue jeans became popular among teenagers. Manufacturers sold 150 million pairs worldwide in 1957. 10 years later, U.S. customers alone purchased 200 million pairs. In 1977, Americans bought 500 million pairs. When jeans first caught on, fashion experts believed the low cost was responsible for their huge success. During the 70s, however, the price of blue jeans doubled, yet demand still exceeds supply. Sometimes manufacturers met the demand by selling irregulars, that is, slightly defective merchandise that would not normally be sold. Although the demand for jeans actually decreased in the late 1970s, a brief surge occurred with the introduction of designer jeans to the market. Popular fashion designers around the world began marketing their own jean styles and charged top dollar for them. Manufacturers constantly seek ways to keep the demand for jeans high. They carefully analyze buying trends to design denims comfortable enough to suit everyone from babies to senior citizens. Triple jeans are made of 100% cotton, including the thread used to sew them. Bland polyester blends are available, but are not as popular. There are several steps between cotton after it has been picked from fields and processed, called ginned cotton and cotton yarn. And if we have to talk about the process, I think we may need another hour because it's described very much in detail and showed also with pictures about the carding and the spinning, the weaving the yarn, making in the end the jeans by cutting the parts and sewing and then pre-washing and preparing it. Interesting is how they describe the quality control. They say cotton is a popular natural fiber because it's strong and flexible. Finished demi is carefully inspected for defects. Each defect is rated on a scale defined by the government. Blue jeans are also inspected after they are sewn. If a problem can be corrected, the jeans are sent back for resewing and another inspection. Snaps, metal buttons, and rivets are checked for strength and rust resistance. Zippers must be strong enough to handle the pressures of heavy cloth, so sample zippers are tested with hundreds of openings and closing. Jeans of the future. Although blue jeans have remained basically the same since they were first designed, they have always been versatile enough to meet market demands. Jeans have been favorites with miners, farmers, cowboys, and students. If movies can deliver a fashion forecast, their appeal may last for another generation. Futuristic yet familiar, Levi's were worn by space travelers in the movie Star Trek V. So we see that good things are not lasting on Earth, but getting also into onto other planets. And maybe we can look at the first part where the reader's guide says why it's so important. How things are made reveals the mysteries behind popular foods and comfortable clothes, complex machineries, and creative conveniences. The items selected represent progress and fashion trends that influence industry, transportation, music, diet, entertainment, and lifestyle. Detailed step-by-step descriptions of processes, simple explanations of technical terms and concepts, and helpful illustrations and photographs highlight each entry. So the entries and how things are made are arranged alphabetically. Although the focus of each entry is the manufacturing process, a wealth of related information is provided. Who invented the product or who has it developed, how it works, from what materials it's made, how it's designed, quality control, future applications, and a list of books and periodicals. To make it easier to link areas of interest, the entries are broken up into several sections. So this is something where I hope you can stay curious with. And to give you a small, very, very small look into something else that you can see, it is very worthwhile reading it. Maybe it brings you some good ideas. It is, for example, also about sugar. Human beings simply seem to have an instinctive craving for sweets. Even newborn infants will more readily drink water if it contains sugar. So why does sugar have such a bad reputation? Aside from causing tooth decay, its main fault seems to be a lack of nutritional value. The worst complaint health experts make about sugar is that it loads people up with empty calories. So before the birth of Christ, sugar cane was harvested on the shores of the Bay of Bengal, east of the subcontinent of India. And it spread to the surrounding territories of Malaysia, Indonesia, Indochina, and southern China. The Arabic people introduced sugar at that point as a sticky paste, semi-crystallized and believed to be an effective medicine, to the Western world by bringing both a sugarcane reed and directions for its growth to Sicily and Spain in the 8th and 9th centuries. Later, Venice imported refined sugar from Alexandria in northern Egypt on the Mediterranean Sea. Phoenician merchants succeeded in establishing a monopoly on this new spice by the 15th century and kept its cost quite high. Soon, French Italian businessmen started buying raw sugar and sugarcane and trading in on their own refineries. Venice's monopoly of sugar was short-lived. In 1489, when Portuguese navigator Vasco da Gama returned from India, he brought the sweet flavoring to Portugal. Merchants in Lisbon noted the profits to be made and started to import and refine raw sugar themselves. By the 16th century, Lisbon was the sugar capital of Europe, can you believe? It was not long before the sweetener was available in France, where its primary use was medical. During the reign of Louis XVI, sugar could be bought by the ones at the apothecary. By the 1800s, sugar was still expensive, but was widely available to both the upper and middle classes. So, and it brings us now to an end. We learned today a lot. We learned how things are made and that it's important to stay curious also in your everyday life. In my everyday life, so for example, where does this microphone come from, how it's made, or my jewelry here at the ear, my lipsticks maybe, where does it come from? That brings us maybe to something really interesting about how where you can be an entrepreneur. And if not, stay curious, because it makes you young and makes you feeling fresh and gives you new insights about everything, about your everyday life. And this brings us to an end, and I hope you stay with us. This is time, which is a gift for you. And thank you for being here. Thank you for bringing in your ideas. And thank you for being with us. Remember, this time is a gift for you to discover new inspiration, embrace exciting insights, and find the motivation to live life to the fullest. Together, we rise. Thank you that you're here. You're a gift.
Did I put the clothes in the dryer? I hope they don't think I was serious.
I need to be
about
awake. Next,
I put my brain shut off.
Just sleep already.
When your racing thoughts keep you up at night, it's tough to let go and get the rest you need. Better sleep can help. You might have heard of white or brown noise, but there's a whole rainbow of color noises, and they can help you calm your mind, reduce stress, and sleep better, like the green noise you're listening to now. With the Better Sleep app, you can discover more color noises and over 200 soothing sounds, guided meditations, and bedtime stories. High-quality rest is vital to your mental well-being and physical health. Calm your restless mind, conquer your day, and sleep better at night. Download Better Sleep from the App Store or Google Play and start a 7-day trial today. Because when you sleep better, you feel better.